The final case for oral argument this morning is in the matter of Marvin M. Schwann, 1992, great-great-grandchildren's trust for the appellant's trustees of the grandchildren's trust is Mr. Eric Magnuson, an attorney from Minneapolis. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Mark Marshall, you will not be presenting today.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And for the appellee guardian ad litem, Lori Schwann et al., is Mr. Alan Sakes from Minneapolis. Is that correct?
That's correct, John.
All right, and Mr. Welk, you'll not be participating today.
No, not.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Magnuson, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. For the record, Eric Magnuson, on behalf of the appellant trustees, Lawrence Perthorff and Alfred Schwann. The question before us today is, how did Marvin Schwann resolve this dispute? What was his intent in how the issue that brings us before the court should be resolved? In determining his intent, we look at what he wrote in the trust instrument, we look at the context, and we see if we can discern a meaning. Our position is the meaning is clear. Under the law, there is no affiliation between the foundation, which is completely separate from the Schwann Food Company, and the offset provision doesn't apply. But alternatively, if at the end of the day you find this a hard question to resolve, if you can say to yourself, I see one side, I see the other, then what Marvin Schwann unequivocally said was the trustees get the final word. Now, if I might...
Who do you think he is referring to then if he wasn't referring to, the affiliated organization?
I think he was referring to, for example, the 3G Trust. If I could direct you, I don't know if you want to turn to it, but I think it's important to look at the diagram at page 21 of the brief, because we have the foundation over here. We have the 3G Trust and the Schwann Food Company. Now, this is the appellant's brief. Now, remember, the offset only applies to organizations that are affiliated with the Schwann Food Company. When Marvin Schwann set this up, he separated the foundation in a way completely unlike any of the other trusts. He gave it all his shares in Schwann and then had them all redeemed. The foundation has no interest whatsoever in the Schwann Food Company. It is truly independent. The 3G Trust owns voting shares. A grandchild's trust owns non-voting shares. But what Marvin Schwann did at the outset, and I think this context is crucial, is he said the foundation is going to be completely cut free from the fortunes of the Schwann Food Company. Now, why is that important? Because the only way the offset provision comes into play at all is if you can somehow trace an affiliation from the foundation all the way over here to the food company.
Can an affiliation be created by having common officers?
I don't know if common corporate officers can create an affiliation, but corporate officers are different than trustees because we are dealing with precise trust law terms here, and that gets me to the very core.
So you see them as being capable of wearing totally separate legal hats even though it's the same person?
It's more than me seeing that, Your Honor. That is a fundamental bedrock principle of trust law. In the statute and in the cases we cite to you, the only cases that address this issue, the courts say that the individual who serves in the role of trustee has no legal relationship with the trustee acting as trustee. And there's a reason for that. Okay? We've turned first to the statute. We turn to 55-4-2. It codifies under the Uniform Trust Act and South Dakota statutory law this fundamental principle of trust law. The powers of the trustee attached to the office and are not personal. Well, what does that mean? It means that the individuals who fill that role cannot act on behalf of the trust. They can only act as trustees on behalf of the trust. And so when you're looking to see where on page 21 do you draw a line between the foundation and the 3G trust down to the food company, you have to say, what's the connection? And the answer is, in the eyes of the law, none. We've cited to you the Norwest Bank case, Norwest Bank versus Odie. We've cited the Franklin case, and we cited the Adam case. In Franklin, the question was whether the trustee, when signed a legal document, was in privity, a concept we're all familiar with himself as trustee. Same guy, same person doing the same act, but the Minnesota court, recognizing trust law, said Odie, who's the trustee, Odie as an individual and Odie as a trustee do not have a legal relationship, and as a matter of law are not in privity with each other. The Franklin case, a mother who was also a trustee, acted in one capacity, but claimed she really should be treated as acting in the other capacity. The Minnesota court again said they don't have a legal relationship. Why is that important? It's important because the definition of affiliated organization under the statute says an affiliate is any person directly or indirectly controlling or controlled by another person. And then the definition of person includes individual, corporation, partnership, business trust, a trust, an unincorporated organization. This is 55-4-1. It does not include trustee. Why aren't trustees included as persons? Because by the very nature of being a trustee, you are a unique legal entity. You can only act within the powers of your office. You cannot act individually. Anything you do as a trustee is limited in your role as trustee. You have no authority to act elsewhere. And so, if you go back to the diagram, we were careful to put in that Alfred Schwann, in his capacity as trustee of the foundation, and Alfred Schwann in his capacity as trustee of the 3G Trust are completely separate legal entities. They have no relationship. And the fact that the same human being possesses or fills both roles is, in the eyes of the law, immaterial. Because the question, remember, is this organization directly or indirectly in control of this organization? And it isn't. It cannot be, because these trustees cannot act in this trust. Simply can't do it. Now, is this a creative, artificial construct, as the circuit court judge said? Absolutely not. It is the law upon which trusts function. I'll give you a practical example. Wells Fargo is a sole trustee, a corporate trustee, for thousands of trusts around the country. Under the circuit court's reading of the law, every one of those trusts is affiliated. And the consequence of that is, for example, if they all own shares in a publicly traded corporation, they're deemed in aggregate to own the shares, and suddenly somebody who thinks they've got a few shares of AT&T may be subject to reporting requirements under the SEC because they own collectively, affiliatedly, more than 10%. In our brief, we point out the Regulation W problems. Banks are limited in the transactions they can conduct with affiliates. Why isn't that a problem where banks serve as trustees in thousands of cases? Because in the trust world, they are not deemed to be affiliates simply because they have the function, they serve as a trustee. Why? It comes back to the cases that we have cited to you. Those cases say there's no legal relationship between the individual filling the role and the trustee. Now, we think, members of the court, that this is clear as a matter of law. We should have won. The judge should have decided in our favor, because the trust law is clear. because the circumstances are clear. There's not a scintilla of evidence that the foundation ever exercised any control over the food company or vice versa. It is only through this attenuated connection that you even get there. But if there is any doubt in your mind, we do know what Marvin Schwann said happens then. He said, the two people in whom I have the most faith, my brother and my longtime friend, whom I've entrusted to manage all of these things, get to make the final call. If the term is ambiguous, and the circuit court said the term affiliate, as used in the trust, was ambiguous. If it's ambiguous, by definition, it is susceptible of two reasonable competing interpretations. Your court has been quite clear on that. Again, this is well-settled law. If there are two competing reasonable interpretations, then by definition, the trustee's choice of one of the two cannot be unreasonable. And if it is not unreasonable for them to construe the trust as they did, with all due respect, the judiciary cannot substitute its judgment for their judgment. Marvin Schwann said their decision with regard to the interpretation of unclear terms of the trust is conclusive. Now, we don't think you have to get there. I think if you go and you look at the words of the statute, 55-4-2, all powers of the trustee attached to the office and are not personal. It negates the very concept upon which the circuit court's award or decision was made, that somehow the individuals have the power to do things. They don't, as a matter of law. They have no power to affect the other trust as an individual.
Is there room in the law, however, for the definition of affiliated companies to be grounded on something other than the statute, the very specific statute that defines affiliate? In other words, what about the common meaning of an affiliate?
Well, Your Honor, we tried to point out...
I'm an affiliate probably with my brother on things. You know, that term is... Are we restricted to the statute?
Well, you know, we have to avoid abstract questions here. We have to remember, we always come back to, what did Marvin Schwann mean by that?
Well, Mr. Schwann was not a lawyer, so shouldn't we, following Justice Zinner's thoughts, use a generic, common, everyday street definition of affiliate? He was a businessman, correct?
He was a businessman.
Was not a lawyer.
He hired the best, though.
Well, it's his intent, not his lawyer's intent.
I understand that, but the lawyers give effect to what he had in mind. And so, sure, you know, we tried to point out that other definitions of affiliate, like those under the tax laws, which he specifically refers to tax laws in the document. And so we thought, well, let's see what they say. They make it very clear that under these circumstances, there's no affiliation between the food company and the foundation. And remember, unlike the other trusts, what Marvin did was take all the relationship between the foundation and the food company and took it away. He redeemed, his estate plan was to redeem all of the shares. And there's no interest left in the foundation. And so if you want to say, Justice, that, well, let's not get technical about this. Let's kind of look at it from a practical standpoint. The practical result is the same. Only a lawyer would come up with the argument that you impute through this chain control of the food company by the foundation, because a normal person looking at it would say, they don't have anything to do with each other. They are unrelated. And I think that's the answer to your question. Now,
well, the follow-up, just, you know, I think it'd be very reasonable to say that Justice Sabers and I are affiliates.
Yes.
But we certainly don't have control over each other.
I've tried.
But then you're going to ignore the statutory definition in the Uniform Trust Act, which says affiliate goes to control. Okay, and so I don't think that you can apply some imprecise or common understanding meaning. I think you look at the statute. And you have two statutes that you have to read together. One defines affiliate, okay, as common control, but specifically doesn't list trustees as the people who exert common control, because a trustee can never act beyond the trust in which he or she is the trustee. And the statute that says the powers of a trustee attach to the office and are not personal.
Where did the, my understanding is the trial court did look at those statutes. So where did the trial court go wrong?
The trial court went wrong in ignoring, he only looked at one. He looked at 55-4-1, which defines affiliate. And he says, well, it's got trusts in there, and that is enough for me, he said. And our argument was, you're only reading one of the two statutes, Judge, and you're ignoring fundamental principles of trust law. And he said, well, you know, I think it's just absolutely clear on the face of it. And he said, because it is absolutely clear on the face of it, the trustees couldn't possibly have reasonably reached a different conclusion. And I don't want to lose sight of that. You know, I don't, you know, I've studied this at great length before I came before you this morning. And sometimes it, you know, it's a little hard to follow. At least I had trouble early on following all of this because I'm not a trust lawyer. When I understood it, it was clear. But I kept saying to myself, you know, if it's not clear, you know, if maybe there's something to their argument, there's something to our argument, you come back to what did Marvin Chuan want then? He then said, conclusively determined by the two people I trust the most. As long as they act in good faith, as long as they reasonably exercise their judgment, they are conclusive. And if you've got an ambiguity, as the circuit court found, how can you not be reasonable in choosing between two reasonable alternatives?
But if he's trying to control the amount of fees those two individuals get, right? Why would he put those two in control of the amount of fees they get?
Because he trusted them. And he specifically authorized them to vote on their own compensation.
Then now, why did he put any restriction on it at all?
Because they're not going to be around forever. You have to remember the great-grandchildren's trust is unique to South Dakota. It is a trust in perpetuity. Long after we are gone, this trust will continue. And you know, Reverend Bergdorf is castigated as somehow trying to line his own pockets here. You'll hear that undoubtedly from my colleague when he addresses you. You know, a trustee has an obligation, a fiduciary obligation, not only to look out for the benefits, the beneficiaries, but he also has an obligation to implement what the settlor told him to do. Settlor said, you vote on your compensation. You decide whether the provisions of the trust mean this or that. And they had to do it. And this case is as much about the next generation after generation after generation of trustee as it is about Reverend Bergdorf. Let me tell you this, if he really wanted to line his pockets, what he could have done is voted himself a trustee's fee out of the foundation. And why do I say that? There's no offset provision in the foundation. Well, that would have solved the problem. We wouldn't be here. Why is there no offset provision in the foundation? Because I submit it's clear as a bell that Marvin Chuan didn't consider the foundation to be affiliated with the food company.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's hard to argue that something is clear as a bell and then say, but if it's not, I still win. I have that argument here. I submit that if you read the statute and you read the cases that we've cited, fundamentally the result is clear. It is clear that there is no affiliation, there is no completed circle there between the food company and the foundation. But if you are uncertain at the end of the day, then you do what Marvin Chuan instructed we do, and you defer to the judgment of the people that he trusted most. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Magnuson. Okay. Mr. Sakes, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Your May it please the court, counsel, and for the benefit of the general audience, I will say that Mr. Tom Welk and I represent the yet unborn great-great-grandchildren of Marvin Schwann, beneficiaries of the so-called 3G Trust. Your Honor, worthy counsel did not review the facts of the case, and so I think it's important that we understand from the beginning that this is a case where a trustee who had a conflict of interest between his own pocket and the beneficiaries of the trust for which he was trustee and for whom he had a duty of loyalty and began self-dealing with the funds of the trust.
Now, was that part of the decision that the trial court made? Did you challenge that, and was there an action alleging a breach of fiduciary duty?
Yes, Your Honor, we argued.
But that was not part of this decision.
Of his decision.
So what happened to that part of the claim?
The judge didn't say anything with regard to it.
So he made no findings that he breached fiduciary duties?
No, but where I'm going to get to shortly is that it's this court that's reviewing this matter de novo and entirely, factually and as a matter of law. And as I said, I'm going to make that point later, so that the judge's findings, etc., are important to look at, but they are not the answer to this case. This court determines the answer to this case. So where I was going is that the trustee himself began writing checks out of the trust at a rate of $150,000 a year when there was an admittedly, no dispute about it, ambiguous provision in the trust about whether he could do that and over objection of the beneficiaries.
Well, I'm still confused. You're going to argue facts, and what the appellant has raised before this court is just an interpretation of the terms of the trust. I don't think we can get to any facts.
Well,
you've not appealed any other part of the decision. Is that? I didn't see it.
In our brief, we.
I understand in your brief, but you didn't file anything that indicated that you were alleging error.
Well, this has to do with the interpretations, as I think I'll be able to establish in the argument. And as he was drawing this money, and this is in the record, he had already taken $2 million plus from the foundation trust, which Marvin had also created. So here he has, without approval of the court, and that's a big point of our argument, without getting instructions, and contrary to the advice of his own counsel, who pointed out that the offset provision was ambiguous and ought to receive instructions from the court, he went ahead anyway. So we're recommending, Your Honor, and we're urging the court to affirm the trial court on three separate principal reasons. Number one, that the trial judge was correct in his analysis of affiliate, and that his logic was good. I'll go into that more later. Second, and this is important, the words that Marvin used were not strictly affiliate. He used the words affiliate, affiliated corporate, affiliated organization. Very important, that distinction. It's broader than affiliate. And third, that in effect, Mr. Bergdorf was attempting to take money from two separate trusts that Marvin had created and take the money from each, and he tries to get around the problem of the offset in this third reason by taking it as executive director and not as a trustee of the foundation trust. A very clever approach to not showing that he's taking money from two separate trusts, which was a different approach to the offset provision.
But again, following up on Justice Montgomery, the propriety of that action is not before this court, is it?
Well, I think it is, Your Honor. I think that all of these facts in the record are for this court to determine and determine whether or not Mr. Burgdorf was violating the offset provision as a matter of law.
But you're not asking us to find that he somehow breached a fiduciary duty by taking it as the executive director salary instead of as a trustee fee.
Well, one of the grounds is going to be that you look at the fact that he did that and determine whether or not that was consistent with Marvin's intent as to what he meant the documents to say. Let's talk about an ambiguity and this very question. Who decides? Who decides when there's an ambiguous provision in a trust document, and there's no dispute that there is? And what I'm going to tell you, Your Honors, is that the court determines all issues of construction in trust ambiguities. Counsel did not get into that subject, but it's very important to the analysis. The national rules on trusts, and we cite a case from New Jersey.
But don't the terms of the trust indicate, when you read at least the terms that were presented here to this court, that Mr. Swan did not intend the courts to get involved in this and gave a lot of discretion to the trustees?
Yes.
His brother and his long-term friend.
Yes. What I am saying, Your Honor, is it's a very broad and important statement that regardless of what the testator said, it is the court that determines construction issues, not discretionary issues, construction issues. And the New Jersey case, which we cite in footnote 7 of our brief, collects those cases, including an early U.S. Supreme Court case. So fundamentally, the jurisdiction is in this court to determine what that ambiguous provision means. But even putting that aside, because there have been arguments here, that absolute discretion was given to the friend and the brother, that is not correct. There was no absolute discretion given to them. They were given discretion subject to good faith and fair and reasonableness. And that's what the trial judge looked at and determined factually that they did not make a reasonable decision. There are also irregularities in that.
Now, I'm going to go back to that. The ambiguity, that is what the trial court determined, that it was ambiguous.
Correct.
Do you agree with the analysis of the trial court on how it should be interpreted then?
Yes.
The ambiguity?
Yes, very much.
And so would you explain more about the fact that you have the same person in two trustee positions somehow makes it affiliate?
Yes, I will. First of all, it's important to recognize that Marvin Schwann prepared all of these documents at the same time in December of 1992. This was Marvin's business plan and his estate plan for many generations. All of them were part of Marvin's plan, sometimes referred to, or Marvin's world. And he focused on the individual trustees. He focused on his brother and his friend. And what he wanted to do was make sure that neither one of them, though serving on many trusts, as they do, would not take compensation from more than one. And that was to protect his descendants. And that's where he put the offset provision, was in the 3G trust. So he said, take a generous salary, but don't take one from each and every trust. That was the purpose of the offset provision. And that's why we look at the individuals here and what they were doing. And that's, Your Honor, why I was talking about that.
Well, if we're going to go into that area,
yes.
Why shouldn't we also consider the fact there's no offset in the foundation trust?
That is an important point, and I think that it's helpful to realize who he wanted to protect. He wanted to protect his descendants from not having the monies drawn out of their trust. And he didn't care what they took from the foundation trust.
How do we know that?
Well, you know that because it's not there. You asked, why isn't it there? And I'm telling you why it isn't there. Because he didn't want to protect. The foundation has over $2 billion with a B. He didn't care about that. He could draw as much as he want. In fact, we don't care. Let him take the $150,000 per year that he wants to take from these beneficiaries not yet born, and let him up his salary over in the foundation trust. Let him take his salary there as a trustee, which he's not doing. And the question would be, why isn't he taking money as compensation as a trustee? Because he's trying to avoid the offset provision. But he can do that. We don't object to him getting more money and take all the money he wants, but not from these unborn kids. That's the point. And so that's why it's not there. And so the focus is not on Wells Fargo and banking, and it's not of interstate commerce. It's on individuals, on this man Bergdorf, the friend. Only one set of compensation is what Marvin said to him, in effect, through the documents. And don't take it from my descendants if you're taking it from one of my other trusts. So we're not talking about changing banking laws here. We're talking about a trustee who's taking money from a 3G trust without court approval. And that's the issue that's important here and that the court needs to look at in its power and jurisdiction to decide ambiguities. Now, I'd like to talk briefly about these affiliates. If I could just take a minute in a simple argument.
Certainly.
In answer to Your Honor's question about the trial judge, we agree with him. And here's how that affiliate, he just talked about affiliate. It's that Bergdorf and Alfred are trustees of the Foundation Trust. They're trustees of the 3G Trust. And because the Foundation Trust controls the company, they are the voting control shareholders of the food company. And they control it. They can do what they want. They can fire the directors. They can hire the directors. They can do whatever they want. And they're the same two people. And counsel is arguing, well, you just look at the office. He calls it in the brief a legal construct. To me, it's mumbo jumbo. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the office of trustee. If he's right, it means that if an individual is self-dealing and he has a conflict of interest and votes for his own salary, which he claims to have done, then you can never have an offset provision. Is he saying it's a nullity? And these are Marvin's instruments. This is not some international or national banking transaction. And the thing is, was the trustee in a conflict of interest? And was he taking this money without a court approval? And was there this affiliate relationship? And then going beyond what the judge did, which I think we can argue because this court determines ambiguity, the words affiliated organization are so important. And Marvin knew it because throughout the foundation document, and I urge you to look at those pages that we reference in our brief, he refers to it as an organization. And in the exhibit, this is this Form 990, which we discuss in our brief, it's the return of an tax return of an organization exempt from income tax. And the first question is, which Mr. Bergdorf filled out, name of organization, the Marvin M. Schwann Charitable Foundation. So that is really, we're saying it's even broader than what the trial judge looked at, and that this court can look at that, and that that's a second reason for affirmance. The third one is, and this gets a little more tenuous, I admit, and that is his taking his compensation at the foundation as an executive director. It's important to recognize, again, that Marvin did all these at the same time, and he said, I don't want Bergdorf or Alfred or any successor to draw monies from more than one trust. One trust is fine, but not more than one trust. And so
would these limitations and these fees be binding on the heirs and successors of the trustees? In other words, if Mr. Bergdorf died if Mr. Schwan died, then the trustees, they come in the same place?
Yes, and it would be only if, of course, they were on the foundation as well as on the 3G trust. Unlikely, but if that were to occur, you'd have the same situation where the same people, the foundation controllers, would control the Schwan Food Company through the 3G trust. When those gentlemen are gone, chances are the trustees would be different at the foundation than at the 3G trust.
Were the lawyers that drew these documents all at the same time, were they still living and attempted to be deposed or used as witnesses in this case as to the meaning of affiliated organization?
Yes. First, the lawyers who prepared them all at the same time, it was Hale and Dorr in Boston. And they were not called as witnesses in this trial. There were no witnesses. It was just on the record that you have before you that decision was made. So, Your Honor, we've given you three grounds for affirmance. And I would just like to, in conclusion, ask the question of Mr. Bergdorf, why are you interested in getting paid as a trustee of the 3G Trust when over at the foundation you're not getting anything as a trustee, but rather as an executive director? Why is he doing that? Why can't he take a compensation as trustee over there? And I'm suggesting to you, as you review Marvin's intent, he's doing that because he doesn't want to face the offset. And the offset is designed by Marvin clearly to protect his descendants who do not have the wherewithal that the foundation trust does. That's all I have, Your Honor, unless you have any further questions.
Guess not. Thank you, Mr. Sykes.
You're welcome.
Mr. Magnuson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Let me answer the last question. The trustee's fee under the 3G trust is mandatory. Marvin Schwan said the trustees shall be paid this. In the foundation, it is not mandatory. It is discretionary. And if Reverend Bergdorf really wanted to line his pockets and do this for his own gain, there's also no offset in the foundation, and we wouldn't be here. As a trustee, he has not only a duty to the beneficiaries, but he has a duty to Marvin Schwan to give effect to what Marvin Schwan provided for, not just for himself, but for the future. We have battled throughout this case with unsubstantiated allegations that somehow this is venal self-interest on the part of Reverend Bergdorf. There's no evidence to that. You know, the argument is he just set up the executive director position as a sham. It is a sham that has as support for it an extensive compensation study that is part of the record that outlines the duties of an executive director of a billion-dollar foundation who gives away $40 million a year and still has the corpus grow. It is more than a full-time job, and he's paid at the low end of the scale. Again, if he's going to try to line his pockets, maybe he should just boost his salary. That's not what this is about. The foundation is separate from the food company. Again, we said this in our reply brief, but Mr. Sykes gets up and says, you know, what Marvin said is you only get compensation from one trust. Wrong. Not what the documents say. You get a trustee's fee from only one trust, okay? But there is no compensation offset for the foundation, and there's no compensation offset unless you're affiliated with what? The food company. Why? Because many of these trusts are hand in glove with the food company for their future. If you're working for the food company, trying to make the food company continue in its tremendous success, you necessarily are going to be working with the owners. Well, the owners are those trusts that have stock, but that's not the foundation. And so it's perfectly logical that Marvin Schwan would say, If you're working for the food company and you serve as a trustee for the owners, I'm going to offset your compensation. Because you know what? You're affiliated. You're tied together. The people that own the company, they're your real bosses. It breaks down. It has no application when you get to the foundation. Mr. Sakes says it is an admittedly ambiguous phrase and then wants you to ignore Marvin Schwann's direction that ambiguity is resolved by the trustees. He says, well, they have a conflict. They have a conflict that was created by Marvin Schwann. He said, you two, I trust, and I'm going to give you the authority to interpret the trust and to vote on your own compensation. It's a conflict they can't avoid. If it is admittedly ambiguous, how can they act unreasonably or in bad faith by accepting one of two competing arguments? Remember, the trust says their judgment is conclusive as long as their judgment on construing a trust term is exercised in good faith and with a reasonable exercise of judgment. The bad faith he's talking about is setting up the executive director position as a sham, okay? Not in deciding what the trust means. Now, there's no merit to the claim that it's a sham, okay? The evidence is conclusive. That's why it didn't have to be decided. But again, it's an apple, it's an orange, and you can't mix the two up. Trust law is precise. This was drafted by excellent lawyers. It is very clear under principles of trust law, South Dakota statutes, and the cases that we cited to you, that the foundation is not an affiliate of the food company. And once you reach that conclusion, everything else goes away, because that resolves the case. They don't cite you a case that says, that contradicts the cases that we've cited. They don't deal with the statute that is clear. They simply say, well, you know, if you don't look at the language very carefully, if you're imprecise in how you read things, and you know, you don't think this seems very good, you should protect the beneficiaries. It's more complex than that, members of the court, as I know you understand. It's what did Marvin Schwann intend? How did he resolve this dispute? And I submit he resolved it easily because in his mind, the foundation was over here and the food company and all the trusts that were related to it because they owned it are over here. They're treated differently. They are unrelated in fact and they are unrelated in law. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
I guess there aren't any, Mr. Magnuson.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you. This completes the oral arguments of this term. When we leave our courtroom and peer and come to a place like Northern University, there's a lot of work involved. It just doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot of work for nearly a full year to have this happen, and as successfully as this term has been, we'd like to thank President Patrick Schloss and the faculty of Northern University, his wonderful hosts, our student interns who were so helpful. I'd like to thank the South Dakota Highway Patrol, the Brown County Sheriff's Office, and the Aberdeen Police Department for our security. We appreciate the fine work by our staff, which also is many hours. We'd like to thank you students for coming. Looking at where you're from, I know that you came from some distance, and I hope you found the trip worthwhile and have a safe trip home. If you do, students, have an interest in how any of these cases come out, when the decisions are issued, they are available on the internet, and the internet site is on the back cover of the synopsis for this term, and they're posted on there within 24 hours of when this court decides them. In fact, if you read in a newspaper or hear on media about a decision that interests you, all of our decisions are posted within 24 hours of decision. So with that, the court is in recess. Thank you.